I guess the first question I have is just tell me a little bit about where you are on this cancer journey.
So we are at the Cancer Center here at Baptist on Nicholasville Road. I am about 15 months into a cancer diagnosis, stage 4 colon cancer that had metastasized to my liver. And I had actually done treatment here last year and had surgery over at UK and had become undetectable for cancer for about 6 months. But I have a recurrence in my liver. So there's about 3 tumors I think we're working with here. So I'm about to go visit my oncologist and then do an infusion. What I'm kind of wondering is how many more of these infusions do I have left before I get more imaging and then more surgery options. And that's what we're hoping to find out today.
What's up, buddy?
Okay. You, I guess when you say hoping to find out, you anticipate?
So
what do you anticipate? Maybe that's the way. Is there something you can even anticipate?
Yeah, kind of the flow of the treatment plan is to do several rounds of chemo. You get a little bit of a break and then a surgery, in my case, because what they're doing is they want to see, I guess, how the tumors respond after the treatment. And if there's been enough activity or lack of activity to go in there and actually operate to remove them. What I remember being told up front for this particular one was that I would have to do 6 treatments. This is number 6 for me. But the last time I saw Dr. Botka last week, I think he'd mentioned that him and Jackson may have talked and may have extended that a little bit. So I'm curious today if I'm going to have like 1 treatment today and that's it, and then I get a break, or if I have to do like 3 total before that actually happens with the break and the imaging and all that stuff. So it takes it out of you.
Yeah, exactly. But how does it take it out of you?
I know this is audio, but you can't really see it, but like my mustache has basically disappeared. Like, I've got some pretty good beard length here, but it's getting thinner and thinner. It's fatigue is always an issue with chemotherapy. And this particular one, it takes me out for about, I don't know, 5 days. And the longer you do the treatments, the longer that period kind of extends. So for about a week now, I don't really have very much energy at all. So.
And you were in yesterday.
Yeah, I had an appointment with Palliative Care to discuss some things with them. But before you come to an infusion, you need to get your blood work done so that they know exactly how your system's responding to the treatments that you have, if there's anything wrong with you, so that they are aware of it and can either pause the treatment or adjust the treatment. So you come in and you give your blood and you get your weight so that when I arrive today, they know exactly how much medication to do in the pharmacy. They know that I don't have any symptoms for any diseases or any illnesses that have popped up. And in particular, having liver mets, one of the treatments I'm on now is called irotecan, and it processes through your liver. So they've been keeping a really close eye on a lot of the liver functions and those metrics. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So you mentioned 15 months, I think. Is that what you said, 15 months?
Yeah. I'm 35 years old, and when I was 34, last August, I showed up here at this hospital essentially dying and was told that I couldn't leave and I had to check in, and that's when I found that I had cancer. So
can you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah.
How that all came down?
Yeah. I'll let these guys clear out. No, nobody when they're that young thinks that they've got cancer. I own my own business. I work a lot, or at the time I was working quite a bit. Very active, my wife and I would hang out all the time, hang out with her kids. She takes a lot out of you too. But I just noticed that I was progressively like just getting more and more and more tired. I started having some stomach issues, particularly when I ate like pizza. Like I thought like I was becoming lactose and like not processing cheese as well. And it just got to a point where my mother looked at me and said, "You look awful." And I was like, okay, I should go to the hospital because I just don't feel good. I think I'd had COVID right beforehand and dropped like 25 pounds or something, and just never really rebounded from that. I'd had some sharp liver pains while I was out having a beer with some friends the spring before, and I just kind of quit drinking right then just because that hurt. I wasn't going to do that to myself. And it just got to a point where those pains were happening more and more frequently, and so it honestly scared the crap out of me, and that's why I came here. So, when you're that young, you really don't expect them to tell you you have cancer, and especially how far along I was, which was stage four, metastasized to my liver. My liver took up my entire chest. Like, it literally had expanded to take up my whole chest cavity, and it looks like one of those old stone walls that you'd see driving down a Kentucky road. It's just a bunch of rocks in there, which is just all tumors, and it's just random and completely filled up with tumors.
And then you had surgery after that?
Yeah, over at Markey. Dr. Botka was my colorectal surgeon. Dr. Joseph Kim was my liver surgeon. Dr. Jackson, who I'm meeting this morning, she is extremely smart, very up to date on the latest treatments, and extremely aggressive and proactive.
Did you start chemo before the surgery?
I did. I did about 7 treatments before I met Dr. Kim, and she saw in the imaging that there'd been enough progression of the disease dying off to talk to him. And when he looked at the images, he said that he could resect basically each side of my liver. I think they took out about 55% of it. It's crazy. It grows back in about 3 days, and then you regain full function in about 6 months to a year.
Wow.
Yeah, you can live with about 20% of your liver. Yeah, I had no idea. So it's crazy. I thought it took up to a year to fully regrow, and Dr. Kim was like, no, 3 days. So hurts like hell, though. They took my gallbladder out, and my colon kind of moved up into that space, and so there's always like residual pain there. I can't run anymore, but hopefully I don't need to. I'm 35, man. I don't think I can.
So, are you that last comment, I guess, you're living with some discomfort all the time?
Yeah, but people, you know, they're like, oh man, like I'll tell them that my kidneys hurt all the time from part of the surgery and the residual effects of that, but my response usually is, well, I'm not dead. You know, they told me I had 2 or 3 months if I didn't do anything, maybe 2 or 3 years if I did chemo the entire time. And in the last year, I've been on treatment for probably 9 months out of that, and had some pretty major surgeries where I've recovered. But I've also had a couple months where I was undetectable for cancer and wasn't on treatment, and got to live life just like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what did now? Did you say more than one surgery?
I've had two.
Two surgeries.
Yeah,
both on the liver.
No, the first one was to remove a grapefruit-sized tumor from my colon, which was also affecting my small intestines and my kidney ureter. They had to cut through my kidney ureter and then rotate my bladder to make sure that those two could reconnect. They discarded my gallbladder, which I didn't find out for about 6 months. That was pretty funny. Yeah, it was like, I think I have pain in my gallbladder. And Dr. Jackson, yeah, you don't have one, sir. Then they resected 55% of my liver. Am I forgetting anything? That was a pretty... Oh, and I had an ileostomy.
I don't know what that is.
It is the medical term for... Yeah.
Oh, like a colonoscopy? I mean, yeah. Not a colonoscopy, but what do they call it?
Colostomy bag.
Yeah. That's in your large intestine.
Yeah. This is in my small intestine. So this scar, it kind of looks like I've been stabbed, like in the abdomen.
Yeah.
Small children then.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like with the big scar, I'll be like, ow, what'd you do to me? And freaking out. But no, I woke up from that surgery. It was supposed to go 6 hours. I think I was under for about 13. And they said everything was just too engorged to heal properly. And so I had that for about 4 months. And I did chemo with it as well. I named it Steeman Seagal.
You named what now?
The ileostomy bag. I named it Steeman Seagal. I just
But now, is that that's in there now?
No, it's gone.
That's the second surgery was happening.
So, yeah, essentially an ileostomy is when they disconnect your small intestines.
Okay.
And they leave your intestines hanging out of your side. So you're essentially always excreting poop into a bag constantly. You can't control it whatsoever. Hey, Charlie. How are you? Good. Charlie's the director of the Cancer Center.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Talking about poop.
Right.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. But essentially, they leave your small intestines hanging out about up to an inch. It's called the stoma. It does change sides depending on your weight, diet, and some other factors as well. But you essentially put this stoma through a sticker that you have attached to you all of the time, and that creates a barrier so that the poop goes into a bag.
Yeah.
And it's gross.
It never works, I guess.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It was honestly the worst part for me. Like I said, I named it Steeman Seagal just to make it funny and not, you know, as dark.
Yeah.
But eventually they reversed it. It's a tool to get better. And that's how I have to look at it, because it worked.
Yeah. And so, now you were on that how long?
That was about 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah, about 4 months before I did my surgery in January, which was the major one. And then had that for about 4 months, and then at the end of May had that reversed. So.
Yep. So you've been through it.
Every doctor that pulls up my chart kind of gives me a holy crap, you're still here.
And how do you feel about that?
I'm still here. I'm very, very thankful. These guys at Baptist do an excellent job. I have complete faith and trust in them. And then whenever they say it's time to go see the surgeons, I've got the same amount of trust in those guys too. They've kept me alive a lot longer than I thought I would be. And when you go through something that extreme, you get a lot of clarity about what's important in life. So as hard as it's been, it's also been very gratifying in the growth that I've gotten out of it as well. So.
Yeah. How do you think? In what way have you changed that way? Or have you changed? You're saying?
Yeah. I think I've always been kind of a go with the flow kind of guy. But it's really crystallized what's important and what's not important, where I want to spend my time and what I don't want to spend my time on, more importantly, a lot of instances. Like, I still manage and run my photography business, but my passion project is now called Help Kentucky, which is a youthful colon cancer awareness and screening nonprofit. We just want to tell people that, you know, this, don't wait till you're 45. My brother is 2 years younger than me. He got screened after I was diagnosed. And they told him if he'd waited 2 years, he'd be in my position. So it's happening younger and younger and younger in Kentucky. And if my story could help somebody just say, you know, screw it, I'll go have a colonoscopy, or I'll do one of those mail-in services. Just get screened, man. This is preventable. The reason I'm here is because I didn't get screened and I didn't know. And I just waited too long. So otherwise,
of course, you wouldn't think of it at 30. Whatever.
No,
you
know, no.
You wouldn't think about getting screened at 30, whatever.
They don't tell you to do it until you're 45. Yeah. Again, I was basically dead at 34 from it. Best I can tell, this has been going on since my late 20s. It's a very, very slow-growing disease when it comes to colon cancer, which is actually an advantage when it comes to treatment and prevention, because you can catch it early enough and prevent it and treat it. And you know, Dr. Botka is an extremely confident surgeon, and he's like, we can do this all day, we can get rid of this, you know, it's no problem, it's very standard. But because it got into my liver, that's why we're here. So yeah. And that part's a little bit hard to swallow, because I mean, shoot, nobody knows how much time they have left, but mine looks even shorter. So I just want to, I don't know, like to make it count.
Yeah. Are you okay with that?
I have to be.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. No, I've accepted it. Nothing's fair in life. And I had a cousin, when she was 6 months old, she had a brain tumor. She lost her left leg to leukemia at age 4, and then she, or bone cancer at age 4, I'm sorry, and then passed from leukemia when she was 6. That happened between when I was 10 and 16, and so I've just, I mean, somebody's got it worse. You know, these are the cards I've been dealt. I'll deal with them. I'm happy to deal with it, because somebody out there's got it worse. I'm at least happy and comfortable. I'm just thankful to be here, happy to be alive.
I'm not holding you up there. They haven't called you back.
No, they'll call us. Yeah, yeah. Okay. We should hear from Hillary pretty soon, I would assume. Okay. I feel like I've been here long enough to know who everybody is. Yeah, I don't know if you noticed, but they didn't even ask my name up there.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They're just like, oh, hey, Alex, you know, here's your sheet. So,
so how many times you been in, you think?
So you come in for blood work, an oncology appointment, and then an infusion. So that's 2 trips right there. I do my infusions every other week, so that would mean that I'm here at least 4 times a month, in addition to any other appointments that I may have. Palliative care, still meet with them. I'm part of a cancer support group with one of the social workers here, so I was just here last Wednesday to meet with a couple people in the basement just to talk about stuff. So I feel like I'm here, I don't know, probably 5-6 times a month at least. So, yeah.
I think in there, did you mention children?
We have a stepson, or I have a stepson. It's my wife's child. He's 5 and a half. He's fun. He's crazy.
I bet he is.
Yeah. He does, but he's a smart kid. He's very much into science and engineering. So.
There you go. Well, what, yeah, well, let me follow up on what you said about your nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
So please. How's that work? I mean, how's that?
So it's called Help Kentucky, and we are brand new. I'll be honest, I don't really know what I'm doing, but that's okay. In most instances in life, you just gotta go with it, especially if you have a passion for it. Our goal is to raise awareness, increase screenings, and then create overall prevention for youthful cases of colon cancer, really to market to people who are between 30 and 40. It's a different kind of demographic than I think the people that are being told to go get screened. And so kind of the way that I've approached it is to create humorous advertisements and use comedy to create that awareness, even play on some nostalgia that people our age have, just to build a conversation and then let people decide if it's right for them to actually get screened and show them how easy it is and what the alternative is. You know, you don't have to be sitting where I'm sitting today. Nobody wants to be sitting here, to be honest, but, you know, like I said, it is what it is. So our goal is to really create the awareness, increase the screenings, and then whatever we're able to fundraise and have left over, we anticipate donating to treatments like the one I've received. Vectibix is a brand new drug that saved my life. It hadn't been on the market very long before I showed up at this hospital. So we want to invest in future drugs and treatments, and then also try to inspire children to become scientists and doctors and, you know, create cures and prevent, you know, ways to stop this stuff. So.